The migrant family was the theme of Pope Benedict's message for the 2007 World Day of Migrants and Refugees, celebrated by the Church in January each year. Noting the many traumatic experiences facing those who leave their countries of origin to escape conflict, oppression or poverty, the Pope said everything must be done to guarantee the rights and dignity of these migrant families in order to protect vulnerable women and children in particular. But he warned in many places conditions for immigrants seem to have worsened, especially in the crucial area of family reunification.
We've experienced even in the last 4 or 5 months in the States raids by the government, by the Department of Homeland Security, on factories and plants that where undocumented people have been working. And one of the tragedies of those raids has basically been is that family members, mothers, fathers, have been, arrested, moved halfway across the country to detention centers where they'll be deported from, and their children have been left behind.
Father Ken Gavin is Regional Director for the United States of the Jesuit Refugee Service, active in over 50 countries worldwide. He was in Rome recently for a meeting of all the regional directors, discussing ways of becoming a more effective voice for the migrant and refugee communities they serve. Father Ken told me more about the particular difficulties facing immigrants and their families in the U.S. today.
Well, certainly for us in the U.S., probably the major issues that we faced during the last year are the issues of immigration reform, which obviously affects more than 12 million undocumented people in the States, and just as well an issue of what we have called professionally the issue of material support, which basically because of a restricted understanding of the laws in the United States restricts people who have forcibly given support to organizations that could possibly be terrorist organizations. It has allowed them not to be able to become refugees in the United States. It's a complicated issue, but it's really an issue that affects lots of people. For example, the Colombian farmer who unfortunately has been had a gun held to his head and been asked to give money to a guerrilla group, the FARC, has been forced to do that. And because of that involuntary help to a guerrilla group, he is no longer able to enter the United States because of the restricted legislation that we currently have. And so we've been working very hard on trying to get a legislative fix to that problem in the States at this point. Unfortunately, we thought we were on the edge of just solving the problem, and it sort of fell apart at the last minute, and now we're back to square zero trying to fix that.
This war on terror, the so-called atmosphere of the war on terror, must have affected your work enormously, hasn't it?
Sure, in large part because refugees, economic migrants who are very vulnerable, come to be seen, unfortunately, by the public and beyond, even by some legislators, as potential terrorists. And clearly our position would be that real terrorists ought to be kept out of the country, but people who themselves have been the victims of terror should be welcomed into the country, as our country has done for so many years.
In what ways are you trying to work with legislators, but also with the general public, to try and educate them to these distinctions that you're making?
Mm-hmm. What we're trying to basically show legislators, and they understand the problem as complicated as it is, that the legislation itself was poorly constructed. Probably no one realized it at the time, and now is being used in a very restrictive kind of way. So what we're trying to let them see is the types of people who really get caught in the bind because of this legislation. So for example, members of the Burmese refugee group who have fought against a very restrictive regime in Burma, who we ourselves are very much opposed to, they would be considered terrorists or having offered material support to a terrorist group, and therefore are left out of the possibility of being resettled here or in the United States. And so forth and so on, with lots of different groups. People who have actually supported our own troops in the Vietnam era, for example, would be considered, having offered material support to a terrorist group. I think one might even say that George Washington would not be able to enter the country these days because he too would have offered material support to a so-called terrorist group, the Colonial American team.
As you say, America has been a country that throughout its history has welcomed waves of immigrants from different parts of the world. How much do you think, though, that this current climate, the current war on terror, is really affecting the way the average American views people coming from a different country today?
Mm-hmm. I think it's a mixed bag. I think if you ask Americans, and most polls, when you ask Americans, do they believe in welcoming immigrants, they immediately say yes. When you ask them whether terrorism is a major issue in their lives, they say yes as well. And so because of those two factors, what frequently happens is that immigrants, refugees, become mixed in people's own minds with the possibility of terrorism. So it's that interplay of two competing goods, I suppose, or two competing values that create the problem of people sort of saying we have to defend our borders against terrorists, and if we lose 1,000 or 2,000 innocent people who are true refugees or true very vulnerable migrants because we have defended ourselves against one terrorist, maybe that's the cost, unfortunately. And we think that there's a better way to approach it, that we think that you can create security for your country, but you can also make sure that people who are victims of terror themselves are welcomed.
To the issue of undocumented migrants living in the United States today, what kind of numbers do you know are we talking about at the moment? There's been a lot of interest suddenly, hasn't there, in the plight of these people?
At this point, most people use the 12 million number. Whether or not that's a real number or not, I don't think anyone really knows. But what it's basically saying is that there's a very large group of undocumented people in the United States at this point. And what the government is trying to do at this point, and the Congress at this point, as you know, is involved in creating a bill that might very well help solve this issue for the first time in 20 years or so. Whether or not we succeed at doing that is another question, and clearly some of the guidelines that we in JRS would use and the entire Catholic Conference of Bishops would also use is simply that we're looking for, you know, a fair and just pathway to citizenship for the majority of those 12 million people. That we want in any legislation that families not be separated from one another, so that family reunification, which is at the heart not only of the church's position, but I think of the larger majority of Americans, that it's really cherished. That any temporary worker program offers people, this doesn't create another underclass in the country, but offers people an opportunity towards permanent residency and citizenship. And that in looking at these problems, that we think not only of a legislative fix for the moment in the United States, but we start to think more globally of what are the global issues that affect the immigration problem. So, for example, if our own support of our corn industry in the United States, the subsidies we give corn farmers in the United States, happens to also destroy the livelihood of corn farmers in Mexico, we have to understand that there's an interchange there, and that it's no wonder that people come north when our own economic policies create that need for them, that pull factor for them to come north.
The difficulty is you're talking about long-term consequences, whereas politicians are more interested in short-term voter support, aren't they? That's one of the key problems you're facing.
Of course, and everyone throughout the country is. And it's very difficult, obviously, to think of those long-term solutions and global solutions. I mean, most of the country probably is not even familiar with the notion of globalization on all kinds of levels, whether it be trade or whether it be merchandise or whether it be free flow of people as well. So that's going to take a long term, an awful lot of education over time.
The church, though, has been in the front line, hasn't it, on many occasions, defending the rights of these migrants, the immigrant people, even in the face of threats against people who do support undocumented workers.
Sure, and I think if you look at the work of Cardinal Mahoney in Los Angeles, I think he's been, you know, a stellar example of someone who basically says that we stand with migrants. We're in solidarity with them. And he so much as said, you know, no matter what the law is, obviously we're looking for a law that's as just as possible, and there will be compromises. But the law has to be able to support the vast majority of the migrants who are currently in the country making real contributions. And that's what people frequently don't see, that the migrants are not just simply a drain on our economy, but they also contribute to our economy. And they will be the people who are supporting baby boomers in the future, and the children of baby boomers as we look to the future and say, okay, well, who's going to be there for us in our retirement?
They also contribute enormously to the life of the church too, don't they?
Well, of course, and they bring a substantial, not only cultural but also ecclesiological contribution. I'm not sure what percentage of the Catholic community in the States is Hispanic at the moment, but it's very sizable, and makes a real difference in the church. I mean, myself, I spend probably half of my Sundays during the year saying Mass in a community that has a large Hispanic population, and you can see there's vitality within that group, and those are people that we clearly want to welcome. And one of the things I think it's important for us to realize as American Catholics, of course, is that we're not American Catholics and Mexican Catholics and Central American Catholics. That one of the strengths of the church is simply to see ourselves, that we see ourselves as one universal church. And that should be able to encourage us to be able to see in the eyes of the migrant person the very eyes of the Lord calling us to reach out and to be understanding and helpful.
And my thanks there to Father Ken Gavin, Regional Director for the United States of the Jesuit Refugee Service.